Welcome to Pivotal Film. I am Tom Nolan.
I'm Mario Ponzio.
And I'm Andy Berry.
And we're on Zoom again. This is like 4 years ago.
COVID times. I know, I'm drinking some New England Brewing Company beer.
Oh, nice.
So it's, you know, it's COVID all over again.
Gonna be drinking a $28 other half, which is amazing.
I have Revolution Brewing from Chicago.
Oh, see? We're doing good. Keeping it local.
It's fine. This $28 double IPA is fine.
I'm drinking this gold stock is a weird little intercontinental bastard ale aged on oak chips.
I don't think I've ever had that one before.
It's pretty good.
Is that new? That must be new.
I guess so. I don't know. I was there the other day and I bought a bunch of six packs for Easter to have some Easter beers. You know how you like to drink when Jesus is resurrected.
Yeah, that's true. That's the first thing you probably did, right?
Mel Gibson's doing the Passion of the Christ too. It's just a bunch of people sitting around the hole being like, he's gonna come out, right?
We're gonna drink some beer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not worried about that because we got all the beers. But we got a bunch of movies to talk about, guys. Many, many. And some go back, some go way back.
Yeah,
I'm gonna struggle remembering one of them because I watched it almost immediately when it came out, so it's been a while.
Is that the first one we're gonna do?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the first one we're going to tackle, it doesn't matter. I was going to I think we corrected our Zoom problems from last time by being in all different places. So our audio is going to sound great, but maybe we'll like stumble over each other while we're waiting for each other to talk or something. I don't know. But the first movie we're going to do is Rose Glass's new film, Love Lies Bleeding.
The excitement in the air is palpable. The atmosphere is electric. A celebration of history in the making.
What is this place? You're looking pretty good in there. There's some pretty serious lines going. Yeah? Why don't you want me working for your dad? Well, he's a psycho. I saw that big girl.
That you two are maybe together.
Do you like guns?
I prefer to know my own strength.
That's not what I'm paying you for.
If you touch her, I'm gonna tell them everything you ever did.
Are you threatening me?
We gotta get out of here. Let's just keep driving. I fucking love you, you idiot. I love you too.
You'll regret this.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, fuck.
Love Lies Bleeding was released in early March, so we've been sitting on this one for a while. We all saw it in theaters. I don't think it's out and streaming yet, right?
I don't think so.
No, not yet.
That's good. Good for them. Hold on, I have to let the cat out of this room.
Yeah, I just did that. It is A24, so who knows when it will get streaming.
Yeah, A24 is bizarre in the sense that, you know, a movie could come on streaming in 2 weeks or it could come on streaming in 20 months.
What is?
That's an overstatement, but A24's streaming release schedule.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean,
three of our movies are A24, so who knows when they'll be streaming. But that's okay.
What else is A24?
Abigail and Civil War.
Is Abigail A24?
Abigail's not A24.
I thought it was.
Yeah. I thought it was Universal, right?
Oh, is it Universal?
I had to read all these weird, stupid, you know, clickbait articles about how it fits into Universal's MonsterVerse movies.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. I was thinking I must be thinking of something else.
Yeah. Universal and then Project X Entertainment.
Love Lies Bleeding is the follow-up to Saint Maud, which was released during COVID. This movie stars Kristen Stewart as Lou, who is the manager of a scuzzy gym. While she's there, she meets Jackie, played by Katie O'Brien, who is a bodybuilder and who's like a, you know, living like a nomadic life
like
while she's
a drifter.
Yeah. While she's trying to get to Las Vegas for this bodybuilding competition. Lou has some skeletons in her closet, almost literally in the form of her father, played by an amazing Ed Harris, who is one of those guys who, like, you know, is really old, and when you look at him, like, he looks old, but he doesn't seem super old. He just has kind of been doing this exact part in some fashion or another for like 20 yeah. the last 20 years or something.
Yeah, he's been the same age for like 20 years.
Yeah, yeah, and he looks simultaneously good and bad.
Yeah.
It's kind of magical. Katie and Lou kind of get involved in Ed Harris's shit because Lou's sister, Beth, played by Jenna Malone, who is an actress I love and only gets to be a punching bag in this movie, for Dave Franco, who I knew was kind of this kind of guy. I feel like this is the true Dave Franco in this movie. And who's like beating the shit out of his wife. Lou goes to kind of take care of that. And things get a little out of hand. Mario's turned his camera off. I hope
I'm here. It's just, my internet was being,
I just hope Ed Harris didn't come get you.
Yeah. I think they took care of him. Spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, we'll kind of talk about like some of the like the plot movements here. Like I didn't mention Anna Baryshnikov's Daisy at all, because she just kind of serves as part of the plot. But it was me and Mario, we talked a little bit about this off air, and you know, Andy, I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about this movie. I think this movie is pretty good. I enjoyed it, you know, aspects of it, while also not really being sold on the world that I was being like placed into. I think there's aesthetically, I think this movie works on a surface level. I don't get the impression that there's a whole lot going on underneath any of this stuff. It's one of these, and we'll talk a little bit about about Monkey
Man. What do you mean
Man.
By that?
That's what I was actually just going to get into. When we talk about Monkey Man, Dev Patel, it's not perfect either, but he brings us a little deeper into this, the larger scope of the world that we inhabit. As far as this movie is concerned, it's the gym, and then there's Ed Harris's place, and in the middle there's this canyon where they throw bodies, and I'm not 100% sure what the hell else is going on in this, like in this universe, in this space that they occupy. Clearly Ed Harris has been up to this for a long time. The FBI is after him. We don't specifically know for what. There's just like a whole host of other things that he has done wrong, and people that he's killed, and cars that he's thrown down there. You know, I guess he killed his wife.
He's an arms trafficker.
But like, to what extent, I guess?
Yeah.
The scope of this movie is very narrow, and I kept waiting for it to broaden out, and it never really did. And so some of the more, you know, I guess we'll spoil them at some point, the magical realist elements of this movie were kind of just seemed odd, because I didn't know what the scope of the place was.
I guess my take is I really didn't want it to be much bigger. I thought keeping a narrow scope made sense for this, just because it would seem, I think, wildly unrealistic, I guess, if you started like bringing more stuff into this. It really is just like it's a family drama, essentially, and really just going based off of like how her relationship is with Ed Harris and her relationship with Lou. It's a love story and a family drama with a lot of fucked up shit going on around it.
And I guess I just wanted like the fucked up shit to be more contextualized than like this is happening right now, while simultaneously knowing that like stuff like this has seemingly been happening forever. Like, not necessarily involving Jackie, but involving a whole host of other things. So that was a thing that I guess that's, I don't, I, I'm like okay with this being a like a family drama, but it seems like it wants to be slightly, it seems like it's suggesting a slightly broader context while not really showing us any of those other things. And that just, again, this is just kind of like a personal thing. It just kind of left me a little bit, it just kind of left me out of it. I wasn't able to get drawn in past like the grime and the scuzziness of the world and like the nature of these characters into like to connect with either Jackie or Lou emotionally.
Yeah.
Mario, what do you think?
Yeah.
I think I agree in the sense that it does feel a bit tepid in many ways. I think aesthetically, it's a nice film to look at in terms of the aesthetic that they went for. Kind of like that, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, grimy, yeah. Cinemax feel.
I felt gross when I was done. Exactly. So, but not in a bad way. Just that's the movie made me feel like I was there.
But I think ultimately for me, it just, you know, it's well acted. It has some visions of what it's supposed to do, but those visions aren't necessarily particularly interesting. And the story that I think that's being told, you know, the family drama and the romance just wasn't captivating enough, or didn't feel as though the stakes it created, although, you know, that like deep stakes, they don't feel as urgent as they needed to. So
I think that's kind of what I was going for, Mario. So I appreciate you being more lucid than I am. I tend to find like Zoom conversations to be like really odd. The stakes, because it's not broader, even if you bring the FBI into this, like the stakes seem like very, very low. So like when Daisy is killed, like I know Lou is really upset, but I also know that like nobody gives a shit that Daisy is dead.
Yeah.
You know I mean, and that nobody really gives a shit about any of these people that are doing any of this stuff. It's just, and this is always my problem with like mob movies and stuff like that, like with like The Sopranos. Like, I never really cared about The Sopranos because I knew it was just like this tiny group of hermetically sealed group of people. And once all these people were wiped out, then none of this would matter at all. And so that was kind of my thinking here too, was that like, you know, they kept bringing us into these situations. And I was just like, if these things would simultaneously be happening and not happening, like Ed Harris's character wasn't not doing terrible shit just because Jackie wasn't there. He was still doing terrible shit. Just now there's a bodybuilder involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I really like the movie. It wasn't a perfect movie, but still I thought it was unique. In that like aesthetic, I just really liked it. The it did take me out with the, you know, the ending, if we want to go into that.
Yeah, but I was gonna say, what did you think of the end?
It confused me. It took me a while to like sit on it. It didn't bum me out as much. It was just like it felt a little out of place for me. But I don't think it hurt the movie. I really don't have a lot of complaints about this movie. I thought all the acting was really well done. Dave Franco, I thought, was really good for being a fucking piece of shit. And Jenna Malone and Kristen Stewart being sisters just makes a lot of sense.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of the thing with Rose Glass, is I do think she kind of like bungles her endings. I mean, a lot of people kind of critically, you know, love the ending to Saint Maud, but I just feel as though it's still a little disjointed from everything else that came before it.
I didn't. I didn't see that one. I heard it's not all that similar to this, so I didn't. I don't know.
They're pretty dissimilar.
Okay. She's good at creating an atmosphere, though. Like she's good at that. It's just like, what is the atmosphere in service of? No, the movie that I kept thinking of when I was watching this was like Eileen. And Eileen kind of, I thought, like hit a lot of these, that same grimy, scuzzy, like period era, but like put like some real emotions into it. And so, like, when Jackie gets huge at the end of this movie, like, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, it's just how Lou perceives her. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. That's what I took away from it. It wasn't super obvious, I guess, watching it.
I don't know. It also felt like it could maybe, not like it could be real. It just didn't feel, I don't know. It felt fake. It felt like emotionally fake.
It's disingenuous.
Yeah. Like it was like she had this idea and she was going to do it. She was going to do it anyway. And I think it would have been cooler almost if like she had like, it became like an actual fantasy and not just this kind of like perceived fantasy. It might've had more of an impact, but in the moment it was just kind of like, here's a thing that like, you know, we already know that Lou loves Katie. You know, it just didn't seem like it. It didn't land. Or Jackie, yeah. It just didn't land. It like, I got it, And I thought it was an interesting, and I like applaud her like audacity for doing it. It just didn't land the plane. It was a little bumpy.
It was not Kenan Thompson.
What? That plane. No. Does he fly planes?
Snake's on a plane. When he lands.
Oh yeah, he's a pilot. When are we gonna do that movie? Never? When we redo our pivotal film list.
It's just not that
interesting. It's definitely gonna be on yours.
It's just not that interesting of a movie.
There's snakes on a plane.
I just saw that movie opening night. It was fun.
Did you really?
I did too.
I did. But
it did not have the insanity of movies of its time, like Crank.
I wanted to be crazier. Yeah.
Or Shoot 'Em Up. Like Shoot 'Em Up and Crankhead.
Well, if I remember correctly, I think
insanity that snakes on a plane.
And that's probably why it didn't really make that much more. It didn't make that much money.
I was trying to deliver, and Snakes on a Plane was just so safe.
Yeah,
David Ellis, even though he's dead.
Yeah, you can't besmirch a dead guy.
Why not?
Take it easy. You know, he might come back for you. All right, that takes us to our next movie. Are you good?
Me?
Yeah.
He said, you good. And there's two people on this call.
I'm looking at the darkness. the next flick we're going to do is Abigail.
Please let me out. I'm scared.
Cut the shit.
You're really good at pretending to be a little girl.
Thank you.
Quick question. Who's inside a cage right now?
What do we know about vampires? How do we kill it?
Crucifixes.
Stake through the heart.
Daylight is a big one. We need to find a way out of here.
We split up.
Game to her.
What can I say? I like playing with my family.
Hello?
Abigail is the follow-up to Radio Silence's two films in the Scream series before the Scream series imploded due to Spyglass being insane people. In Abigail, there are criminals who kidnap the daughter of a very wealthy man whom they're going to keep her for ransom for 24 hours with receiving a $50 million ransom for this girl. So each of them will split $7 million. Soon, however, they learn that this daughter is the daughter of a big mythical sort of crime lord, and they try to escape, but it turns out they are locked inside this house, and little security gates go down, so they're completely locked in, and we find out that Abigail is a vampire, and she starts, you know, killing people.
Vampiring.
Ripping off heads and tearing off faces and doing that sort of thing while dancing with headless bodies.
A lot of dancing, yeah.
And that is basically the film Abigail. It's just a vampire girl eating and killing criminals who turn out to have been basically placed there for her pleasure as a hunt, because they did things that were either worked against this crime lord, who is basically Dracula, we are led to believe, killed some of his people. So this is every so often for her pleasure. They put people into this house so that she could take him out, take him down, do your stuff, as they say in Independence Day.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I had fun with this. It is the lesser Ready or Not for me. I think the two films share a very, very similar DNA in terms of both being gory horror and, you know, comedy, even down to one of the main forms of death being exploding into blood pools, as happens in both of those films.
People explode into blood pools and scream?
In Ready or Not.
Oh, in Ready or Not. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like Ready or Not, you know, this was carried by its performances. You have Dan Stevens just chewing on the scenery. Catherine Newton's kind of doing the same thing. Alicia Weir's fantastic in this.
She's good.
Yeah.
A pivotal film nominee for.
I think she's a winner. Didn't she win for you?
Did she win?
I think Maybe. She did. You love that performance.
I did. She's good work here. I think everyone's firing on all cylinders. Kevin Durand is surprisingly pretty hilarious in this.
Wow, she's only 14 years old. Jesus. She's gonna be a star.
But but I do have to say, like, it is a lesser Ready or Not. This is something I kind of will watch once, enjoy it, and then not come back to it. You know, whereas Ready or Not is a movie, or Scream 6. Also are movies that I've watched multiple times, and this one is just kind of a fun one and done.
Mm. It was fun. I liked it. It was a great casting. I think just like Ready or Not, it just had a good cast and just fun kills, fun liners. The onions line was great.
Danny, those are fucking onions.
Yeah, Dan Stevens plays such a good piece of shit. So I don't know. A lot of it worked. The ending was a little weird, but it made sense. I don't know.
Yeah, see, that was my biggest issue with it, was rebuild up Frank to be an asshole, you know, to be a jerk, to be in it for himself. And I could see him potentially being lured to try to take over the crime family by killing Abigail and, you know, Dracula, basically, and also killing Joey because she's in the way. What I didn't buy was Frank going, I'm going to turn you also into a wraith or whatever they're called, in order to have you kill your own son. I was like, this is not what he would, this is not at all what he has done or acted like at all. And it seemed they wanted to do that so they could, you know, transition Abigail being kind of like a hero. Anti-hero in the end. And I just kind of felt it was really disconnected. I would have almost preferred, you know, the Giancarlo Esposito Lambert character to maybe be the final guy. And, you know, that way there's somebody who, like, potentially could buy that. I just did, or, you know, Frank is only going to kill her just because she's in the way sort of thing, or she knows him, knows he's a vampire sort of thing. But I think the abject sort of evil he becomes at the end was a little weird. I didn't really buy that.
Well, it was a little weird, and it was like a little endless. Like, you know, his entire role for the last 20 minutes of the movie just became saying, like, clichedly evil things while he, like, threw her across the room or, like, pinned her against the wall by the neck. Yeah. And it just, like, happened, like, over and over and over and over and over again. And that's, I mean, and that's, like, the thing about this movie is that, again, I also liked it. I had a lot of fun. I thought its great strength is in its casting. Melissa Barrera is fantastic.
Yeah, she's still bringing it. It's good to see.
Yeah. Even though she, no, I'm not going to say it. I had a joke all in the chamber, and I'm not going to do it.
She's very bad in Scream 5, so I'm glad to see she's still acting good.
She's good. I think this movie's main flaw is that the script is very basic and, like, full of cliches, and it's just, like, a deeply unoriginal concept. And once, you know, me and Andy were kind of talking before we got started that, like, once the vampire is, you know, Abigail's introduces the vampire, which we know is going to happen because of the trailer, it's just like, all right, well, what else are you going to do?
And then, would the movie have been better if we didn't know that going in, do you think? Or would it have... I don't know.
That's leading me to my exact point. I think it's fine regardless if they don't stop for 20 minutes in at the beginning of the third act, I guess, or, like, the end of the second act, for her to just drop an exposition bomb on, like, who everybody is while they're just standing there watching her in an elevator. I'm just like, I don't fucking care about this. Yeah. Who cares who anybody is at this point? Like, I know it's just like to bring the drama and stuff like that, but to your point, Mario, they lay out this thing that everything that Frank is doing, Frank has done, has been like very calculated. And in the end, he makes like a deeply uncalculated move. And so it just seems like the characters are, you know, they're just kind of, not stand-ins, but they're just like archetypes. So like one of the things that I really was like when they said that, like Angus Cloud, whose character at the very beginning of the movie, like was grating on me so badly. And then, you know, she's like, oh, you're a sociopath. I just kept waiting for him to do something like sociopathic. And like he didn't. So yeah, why are you mentioning that he's a sociopath?
He was just a guy.
And like that's, I found that part of the movie though really interesting. Like watching this guy like kind of move through this house. And I thought he was going to do something to Catherine Newton, but he didn't. He just like walked out of the room. It just seemed underbaked. While simultaneously being like giving like really good actors a chance to do something like, you know, fun.
Outside of Joey, he's actually generally the least sociopathic of any of the characters, which I found kind of hilarious. I think you just leave it at you're not a professional, and just that's all you have to say.
Right.
Yeah. I really liked his character. It's weird. Like I don't know if you guys watched Euphoria at all, but he's really he was really good in that, and so I was interested to see these movies. It's a shame that he passed last year, or 2 years ago, whenever it was.
It was last year, yeah.
Because he has an interesting way about him, and I really liked him. And it was pretty much playing the same character he did it does in Euphoria, but it's just really interesting. It almost feels like a regular guy, kind of nice guy, but kind of weird, kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. He felt the realest of them for some reason for me.
Well, yeah, and I kind of wonder just from a production level how much of like loose stuff they used of his performance that they might have not used just because of the fact that he died.
Because
this was filmed before the strike. Then the strike happens, it ends filming, and he dies during the strike. So then they start reshooting afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see, because his performance does feel a little loose, and there's a lot of stuff in there that you kind of like wonder why it's there in terms of what he's saying or how present he is in that first act. Like he's just so present. And I wonder how much of that was because of his death.
That's interesting.
That, like, they make him more of a focus, and his stuff feels a little looser, feels a little bit more like not a final cut sort of.
I guess so. That's an awesome point, Gold Star for sure. And I think it would be something that like I think would have like a lot of resonance if Joey seem more consistent with the characterizations, like in general. So there's no real Joey is an army medic and a junkie. There's no reason that she should also be a mentalist. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that was such a weird scene to me. I didn't know what the point of that was.
I think it was just to kind of like establish everyone's archetype, but it seemed weird. It would make more sense if it was coming from Dan Stevens,
a detective that was like exactly, profile people and everything.
Who was working undercover and doing all this stuff. But like coming from her, I was like, and she delivered it great. And she, you know, she has a real good energy and stuff like that. But like when she was done, I was like, why did, and as they were revealing more of her character, you know, that character or Don Rickles was like, army, and she's like medic, and I was like, army medics don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not like great intuitors of like the human condition. So where did she get hers from? Like just from, you know, running drugs for this, or for being for being a medic for drug houses or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
Again, none of that stuff matters except for none of that stuff matters a lot during this movie because it's just kind of a good time. And then when it really slows down in that second, the end of the second act and then the beginning of the third act and through most of the third act, it's just kind of like, ugh, like I don't need all this characterization. Like they didn't do this shit in the 80s. Just show me seven people and then kill them. Like
all the stuff in like the second act was great. Like it moved when she took over, was it Sammy's body and stuff, and that like all that stuff was really, really cool, and I really like that. Then all of a sudden it just screeches to a halt, and it's like, oh boy. And then picks back up, but
that Sammy thing was interesting, except for the fact that it made Catherine Newton look exactly like Miley Cyrus, which was really weird.
Did it? You thought
I didn't notice that.
I guess okay. Maybe.
She had like, and that, I mean, so my final kind of like thing, not against the movie, because again, I thought it was a good time, is that like, you know, these guys are supposed to be the next generation of like horror directors. I gotta have a better like character design for the vampires. Like I just gotta do it. Like it changes the shape of their face, like, you know, but not in like an interesting way, like in the prosthetics just don't fit right in their mouth kind of way.
They look like what's the guy from Baraka?
Yeah. Yeah.
They look like Baraka, not exactly like Baraka. Yep.
And it was just like,
I was like Baraka. That would have been cool if she was a vampire, but she was Baraka.
Maybe they'll do an interview and they'll be like, we were inspired by Baraka. Yeah. But it just seemed like, I don't know, it just seemed like an incomplete like character design. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree, which is weird because I think they did good work with like their core four characters in the two Scream movies in terms of building those characters slowly without a lot of exposition dumps.
Mm.
And Ready or Not kind of does the same thing where you get a feel for the people without them explaining it. So it was kind of weird here kind of having these huge like backstories with everybody.
Well, Ready or Not takes place in a house too, right?
Yeah, yeah, this is similar to Ready or Not.
Huh. I wonder why they did that.
They just like shooting in mansions.
They like shooting in mansions.
Yeah.
Are either of you guys Downton Abbey guys?
No.
No.
So it didn't mean anything to you when like Dan Stevens' character explodes and then 2 seconds later Matthew Good walks in?
Nope.
Oh, was that the joke? I was wondering why Matthew Good got cast.
Well, so that's I had my first thought. So my wife pointed it out to me when I was telling her about that moment. I was like, does anyone care that Matthew Good is like the vampire? Was that supposed to be like a meaningful like reveal?
I was wondering.
I looked it up as soon as like, it was over. Yeah.
I was like, but is then, this a big cameo that Ozymandias is?
That's what happens in Downton Abbey, though, is that like Ozymandias. Dan Stevenson's character dies, and then Lady Mary, who is played by Michelle Dockery, marries Matthew Good.
Oh, so that's that's just a joke then.
It seems like a joke.
It is. That's a Downton Abbey joke.
But like, who is watching Abigail and is being like Downton Abbey?
The Venn
diagram.
A good one.
Well, I think Easter egg.
I also think there was kind of some references to because she's called Abigail. She does some of the things she does is very similar to the taunts that Bray Wyatt used to do.
Oh, really?
Wrestler, and he had a sister Abigail sort of thing. So I do wonder if like these are like slight references they're doing.
It would not surprise me. I actually wouldn't be surprised if this movie makes about as much money as it made this weekend, next weekend. I saw it today, which is a Monday, at 11:15 in the morning, and the theater was full. I had to sit in the third row from the front.
Oh, wow. I saw it
which
alone.
Is fine.
So okay. I don't know. Yeah, it must be playing different out there.
I wonder if it's like a word of mouth thing. Like if people like, you know, the people that did go to see it are just like, oh, you should go see it. It's a good time.
I saw it at like 4:30 on a Friday, but it was like, I figured I'd be more than one person in the theater, but that's whatever.
My theater was pretty crowded.
Yeah. So
I think this would be more fun if the theater was full. I think I would have had a better time even. This seems like one to watch with your friends.
I wish it was gorier.
Yes. It
was fairly gory, but
yeah.
It kind of
fine.
It did like there was a lot of
blood, but there wasn't like
yeah, and the wounds that they like established that they got were not like significant wounds, or like leg stab and like gunshot to the side, and like she stabs Kevin Durant in the chest with that crucifix a bunch of times. You know what I mean? It's nothing like there's nothing very ostentatious about any of the gore. It was just,
I mean,
like,
Angus Cloud lost his head.
We didn't see it.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, and you know, what's his face getting half his face ripped off.
But yeah, again, we didn't see it.
No, exactly. Compared to something like Scream, where it just feels brutal because like you see the stabbing and whatnot.
This is actually go ahead.
Like,
this is a perfect transition to our next movie.
This just
yeah,
didn't.
I think so too.
This, yeah. yeah, this just didn't feel visceral in a lot of ways. It felt very cartoony, I guess.
In a way that, like, I definitely think it meant to be. I think
yeah,
they
for sure.
They weren't trying to make like Terrifier 3 or anything like that. They wanted to just have a good time movie. And even like after watching it, I was like, oh, a parent could definitely bring like a really interested in horror or scary movie, like 12 or 13 year old to see
Absolutely,
this movie
yeah.
without really doing too much, without actually having to worry about it at all.
Yeah, probably. I could see that.
Because there's no sex. And then like he's there, you know. The all the gore is very like
it's kind of comedic.
Yeah, it's very Mortal Kombat-y.
I mean, unless Melissa Barrera covered in fake blood, and you know, it wakes a kink in that child, and then
that's a cool kid. Then that's just a cool kid.
if they know it's fake,
right? If you bring your child to see our next movie, and it awakens a kink in them, they may have something. Yeah, there's something wrong with him. You might want to take them to the doctor. Get them checked out. Our next movie is Dev Patel's directorial debut, Monkey Man.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Spooky.
You need to fight for your mother, for all of us.
Just one small ember can burn down everything.
Monkey Man, radar.
One small ember can burn down everything.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Monkey Man.
All right, so Dev Patel plays the kid, or just kid. When we meet him, he is in an underground fighting ring. He's dressed he's got wearing a monkey mask, and he's getting his ass kicked all the time by King Cobra and Baloo the Bear. But the kid's got a goal, and the goal is to exact revenge on the sheriff or the head of police in
the chief
of city,
yeah, the chief, yeah.
Of all of India, no, it just is seemingly, because he came into his town one day with a bunch of military and cops and burned his village down and killed his mother. He's got to get revenge, so he's been training, doing some undercover work. He enlists half of India to get him a purse from. I forget what her name is. I guess it doesn't really matter. But she runs like a gambling ring, hotel, casino place.
She's the hotel manager, right?
Yeah, but she also
why
her name
is office...
Queenie was her name.
Queenie,
yeah,
yes.
Right. Why is her office just by the kitchen? That doesn't
Queenie
that's
Kapoor.
Not where her office would be.
It's weird that she has an office by the kitchen, but she also has a whole elevator floor designated by a queen's crown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and oh, she, well, yeah, weird. And we'll talk about the plot mechanics as we get into this movie. But kid sneaks his way into the inner circle there. He gets an opportunity to shoot Rana, and it does not go well. Does not go well. He does a little damage, puts a little, some fear in them. There's also a guru there that's counseling a Modi-esque figure in how to kind of take over India there. But the kid gets saved by a group of people that have been oppressed and marginalized in Indian society, and they teach him how to fight with a punching bag full of rice and some drums, as one does. Afterwards, he is a fighting machine, and in one of like the great moments in movie theater history for Tom Nolan, equal only to the Nutty Professor moment, where Larry Miller says that he's going to kill Eddie Murphy's Professor Clump, and nobody else in the theater was laughing, and I was just dying of it was just like so funny to me. He steps back into the ring because he wants to make some money for these people so that they can pay off some mobsters so they can stay in their church. And he fights King Cobra, and King Cobra, you know, charges him, and he does one stiff kick to the face, and he fucking dies. Or if he doesn't die, he just
gets knocked out,
unconscious.
It killed me. I was laughing so hard when that happened.
It's meant to be comedic.
That was real good.
It was so funny.
And then the movie like needed that moment. I didn't really know it needed that moment until I was laughing. And I was like, oh, this is just like, now we're just in Kick-Ass territory.
Yeah.
The rest of the movie is essentially Kill Bill meets The Raid, where he is a killing machine. And if you thought that in Abigail, you didn't get to see enough people get stabbed in the chest like six or seven times and hear that sound of and like see just blood shooting out, Monkey Man is the movie for you.
Well, yeah, like
you get to see it so much.
The raid comments is very appropriate because the Raid, it has a very great neck throat stabbing.
Oh yes.
Well, one of the best parts. Yeah.
He uses his mouth to push a knife into a guy's throat.
So he uses his mouth a lot in this movie while it's fighting.
Awesome.
Which it was just like he was biting guys so much and
he bit that guy's nose off.
He was biting guys' hands. He was just doing a lot of biting.
That's what monkeys do. I think monkeys bite.
I know. Yeah. I just thought by like the eighth time it happened, I'm like, man, this guy just keeps biting everything. It was cool.
Man, who felt bad for that brothel like customer who just
got the neck by the axe to the neck.
Poor guy.
I laughed really hard at that one too.
Yeah, axe to the neck is tough. I liked how that guy was just like there all of a sudden with an axe ready to go.
Yeah, that axe thing was funny. It just out of nowhere, but that was a really cool scene.
Well, that was a long one take leading to that too, right?
Yeah.
That was fun.
There's some really, really cool shots in this movie.
I think to that exact point, this movie is propulsive. It's when it's energetic, it's really energetic. It's viscerally felt. There's some narrative wonkiness in the middle of it that I'm still not 100% sure I got a hold on. There seems to be like an over-reliance on flashbacks, especially to like revealing things where they've already shown us like most of what happened. And now you're showing us that and the rest of it.
That could have been tightened a little.
And that's the thing. It's this movie, I feel like, is this movie wants to be tighter. It's not. It doesn't really detract all that much from the moments where this movie is just on fucking fire.
Yes. Yeah. So absolutely. I got the feeling that this movie has been tightened up. Feels like there's a lot that was kind of left out, or maybe when Jordan Peele got his hands on it, helped. Like, because I could see this movie being like 3 hours long. Because there's like a lot of stuff that they kind of like skipped over, and I feel like it was probably in there, and it's probably for the best that it was cut out.
I don't know. There's like a whole bunch of politics that are still in the movie that I didn't understand that I'm sure they had to have been in a longer cut of this movie.
I
would have been happy to have just like a little more context for like what the hell is going on.
Yeah. But
like, you know,
it was also felt like unnecessary too at the same time. So they kind of. I felt like they added like the exposition kind of in the background with like the news voiceovers and things like that.
Well, and I think that part was to make a statement about Modi was pretty important to Dev Patel.
Like, yeah, I agree.
That's the impetus for like making this movie in the first place.
It was why Netflix dumped it, I think. So,
I mean, it hasn't even been certified yet in India, so it's probably not even going to get released in India.
That's fine. It'll be one of those like underground movies that like, you know, somebody, you know, groups in India will get and they'll show Dev Patel just like destroying, you know, Modi's India. And That'll be
also
great.
Yeah. I didn't realize Dev Patel's like somewhat of a sex symbol because there was my theater was pretty crowded, actually very crowded. I was next to a guy who I'm pretty sure was tweaking a bit on some sort of drug.
Okay.
But when he took off his shirt, multiple ladies hollered.
Well, did you see what he looked like when he took his shirt off? Come on.
I know, but I just didn't expect that.
I didn't either.
It's the first time I've ever been in a movie and I heard people holler at a man going shirtless.
Oh. Hmm. Yeah. I wonder if that ever happened to me. I just remember going to see Dunkirk and all those little girls were there literally to see Harry Styles. They didn't cheer ever.
Well, I don't think he took his shirt off either.
No, he was going to die that whole time. There was nothing sexy about Dunkirk.
No. I really like, for a directorial debut, this is phenomenal. I can't wait to see what Dev Patel does next. Like what he was doing with the camera was very kinetic.
Yeah, I wish it was a little more controlled. Some of the fight scenes are a little hard to follow, but I think that's kind of a sign of a first time director.
He's a first timer. I'm just saying, like, if this was like his fourth movie, I probably wouldn't like it as much, but I see a lot of potential, and I see a lot of potential for him to be an action star, which I didn't think before, because he really does a really good job in this.
I think so, too. I mean, the Aaron Taylor-Johnson thing is still, like, up in the air for Bond.
Dev Patel would be awesome.
I think they should reconsider and just give it to Dev Patel, because he is great.
That would be awesome. I didn't even think about that, but that'd be awesome.
He is British, right? So
yeah,
that'd be fine.
I mean, he doesn't give himself a ton to do, like from an acting standpoint.
No.
But just from a physical performance, he owns every single one of these fights.
Oh yeah, and I really appreciated how the villains in this just were utterly immoral. Gross,
repugnant
assholes. Yeah,
yeah.
The
nothing redeeming.
The guru guy, you know, just being what was it? The Baba.
Baba Shaki. Yeah,
yeah. Just being that evil, core to his damn core evil, to the point where he, you know, has the hidden knives in his padukas.
Yeah, I was worried there for a second that was going to end there. I had like a second, like it was gonna, you know, and he would be kind, you know, become this like mythic figure that like almost got all the way up there, and he didn't. So
but instead, he just kills him.
Yeah, which again, to
the forehead,
and well, where Abigail did the same thing, but Monkey Man was more deeply committed to showing how to murder somebody by stabbing them in the chest a bunch of times. I finished them by stabbing them in the forehead.
I did assume that he died. From his injuries in
this? He sure did. Yeah.
So he's still got, I still think he's going to be that figure that's going to cause, like, help people, like, rise up. But he still got the guy. So,
and that's what I wanted. That. Yeah. He had to get him.
And he got him. He sure got him.
But yeah, it's Dev Patel is becoming, like, one of the most, for me anyway, like, if he's doing something, I'm going to check it out. Because he's probably doing something very interesting. He's not like a lot of other actors. Like he did, I think his last three movies that got released were Green Knight, David Copperfield, and this.
Yeah.
Like you can't have three more different movies than like a really serious David Lowery period piece, a funny Iannucci, David Copperfield, you know, adaptation, and this movie.
He also did two of the, or a few of the Wes Anderson shorts.
He did those shorts, and he was great in those too.
Yeah.
So you'll watch anything that he's in. So if the third best exotic Marigold Hotel comes out, you're gonna be right there for it.
Who else is in it? How many of those elderly people are dead?
Judi Dench is still alive. Maggie Smith, Bill Nye. Oh, I think most of them. I think all of them are.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never seen any of those movies. Are those any good?
No, I don't know. One of them's dead, but the rest of them are still kicking. So
maybe we'll do that. We'll do a Snakes on a Plane and the Best Miracle Hotel.
You gotta watch both of them or just one of them?
Both of them live watch-alongs.
Yeah, we'll do a We'll do that first ever. We'll do a Patreon, and it'll be like a commentary track.
We'll do like we did the Justice League movie, where we stop every like hour to just yell at each other.
Where I'm progressively getting drunker and making the same points over and over again.
Oh man, I tried to watch the new whatever it is. Yeah, Rebel Moon. I couldn't do it.
I haven't watched either of them. Yeah.
I didn't dislike the first one.
I know you said.
But when that Scar Giver came around, I was just like, hey, you know what? I'm good. I don't need to
I'll probably watch them still.
I don't have Netflix. Excited. But Yeah. Are you gonna watch the 6 hour long R rated director's cut?
No.
Is that a thing that's gonna happen?
Yes, that is.
I think that'll happen. Boy. Why? How is that possible?
How's that possible?
That can be 6 hours long.
Because Zack Snyder loves himself some Zack Snyder.
Is it just everything is in slow motion? The whole movie's in slow motion?
And he just doesn't edit it. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Every shot goes in.
Well, the last film on our list is one that was highly anticipated by the group. I believe it was on Andy's most anticipated list. Tom, it wasn't on yours, right?
No, but it was. It was close.
I would assume it's an also ran.
Yeah.
Because you've liked almost all of his movies.
By default, it's number two now since Mickey 17's delayed. So,
well, it's not anywhere on your list now because it came out.
Yeah, and it was worth it.
And that is the new Alex Garland film. Maybe the last film he directed.
No, he's got one more.
Sometime. I thought he's going to take a break. I thought
he's directing one more right now.
Oh, okay.
And then he's done.
Civil War.
All across America, critics are raving about the movie event of the year.
It is American, 100%. That's what I'm talking about.
Cool.
We're going to D.C.
Are you serious? The United States are vaporized. They shoot us on sight in the Capitol.
I've never been scared like that before. And I've never felt more alive.
Holy fucking shit!
You watch. Soon as DC falls, they'll turn on each other.
Whatever happens, we don't quit.
Oh my God.
You don't want to miss this.
God bless America.
Civil War. Rated R. Get tickets now.
Apparently, a woman that
apparently
goes to the library thought that this movie was going to be about the Civil War.
I mean, it was.
She was deeply sad that it was not about the Civil War.
Did she like not see trailers for it? Or that'd be great if she went and still thought it was
the blue and the grays.
Still thought it was about the actual Civil War.
She was very
sad. Complained about how inaccurate it was.
Yeah,
they didn't have cars in the Civil War. somewhere in the near future, or something, who knows? A president played by Nick Offerman has entered his third term. He is a despot. He's bombed with drones his American citizens. He's disbanded the FBI, and you know what? Texas and California are like, we ain't having the shit. We're seceding. And Florida joins them. They kind of create their own little thing with some other states, and
fucking
then
Florida.
Oregon's like, we want to get on this, so they succeed too, and they're doing their own thing. And a civil war's broken out. We follow war journalists. Two photographers. One is a highly accredited war photographer who has done decades upon decades of various wars. And Joel is a reporter and a news writer who they plan to go to Washington, D.C. to try to interview the president, even though that is possibly a death sentence. They are joined by Sammy, who works for the New York Times. He was Lee's mentor, and also Jesse, who is a young up-and-coming planned war photographer, as they are traveling to Charlottesville, which is the front line of the war. Where the battles are happening, because the Western forces, that allied force of Texas and California, is marching on the presidency, marching on the White House, because that's soon to be upheaved. They're in New York. They slowly travel. It's mostly a travelogue of a film as they see kind of the falling apart of America and the various kind of things going on and the horrors of war. Along the way, Sammy is killed when he is shot after saving the other three. They get to Charlottesville to learn that the army has already surrendered and that the White House and the president is imminently about to be overthrown. They decide, though, to march on to Washington, D.C., to, you know, be on the front line of this kind of takeover. They do so, and as they kind of storm into lead the brigade basically into the White House, Lee is killed, saving Jesse, even though she kind of said, you know, that she wouldn't do such a thing. And as she is killed, Jesse takes her photos because she's become just as sort of not disillusioned, but just so war hardened and battle hardened as Lee was, and Lee said she would become. Joel finally gets his quote from the president before the president is killed. And the movie ends with the photo that Jesse has taken that will sure to be the photo, her Wikipedia sort of photo, the thing that will make her into probably the next sort of renowned, legendary war photographer.
Quite the jarring photo, too. So that was really something to end the movie that way.
I think it's probably pretty accurate to like other moments where like leaders have been like deposed like
through
violence. Yeah. I didn't look it up, but I assumed that it was like,
I mean, like how Saddam Hussein and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's incredibly similar to the photo from the Vietnam War where it was the guy that got shot in the head by the police chief is shooting the one Viet Cong in the head, and it's like right as the bullets exiting.
Yep.
That's what it was similar to. What I saw this. I think this film's utterly fantastic. And I'm not an Alex Garland guy, really. I'm not a big Annihilation guy, as we've talked about before. I don't necessarily love Ex Machina. I adore Dredd. Dredd is still, and Alex That's Garland awesome. Basically directed that. But no, this hits on all cylinders. It is tight. It is intense. It is unrelenting. There are some narrative conveniences that I wasn't necessarily a fan of. Bringing back those two Asian reporters was the moment where I was like, oh, the Jesse Plemons scene is going to be next because these two are going to get killed by Jesse Plemons to raise the stakes. And that did happen. But it's forgiven in the fact that it, you know, covers a deep seated intensity throughout and is unrelenting in that even those moments of calm where, you know, the Sturgill Simpson song is playing while Sammy's bleeding out and looking at the forest fire. Like it's a beautiful, hauntingly beautiful moment, but it's still like painted against this backdrop of blood and sinew. And you know, I don't necessarily see this movie as like a marketing of like what society has become, the world has become, more than it's just a deeply anti-war movie. Like,
yes, you know, 100%.
The point is showing
or what could happen if people quit talking and communicating and trying to work through things.
Exactly. But saying like, this is what war is like. This is, you know, a lot of the things that Lee sees in the flashbacks, such as the necklacing, you know, come from, you know, people in other countries who have in real life done these things to their fellow countrymen because of that kind of deep divide. I just kind of felt that it works deeply as an anti-war movie and as a movie that kind of, you know, following these war journalists and kind of saying they're active participants in it, and the fact that they also get kind of their thrills and their joys from these awful things. Like almost nobody in this film is a good person. Nobody, I'd say nobody in this movie is a good person, really honestly. Sammy comes the closest. But you know, everyone
I don't know. I wouldn't say they're not good people, but they're like products of what's going on. I mean,
Absolutely.
Could Kirsten Dunst be a good person outside of war? Maybe. I don't know. She seems pretty hardened. I really liked her performance too, by the way.
Yeah, everyone is incredibly solid here, but no, it's a deeply unforgiving sort of film, and I felt it worked in every way. And the sound design is fucking immaculate.
I mean, visuals were insane too. So, like,
yeah, visually for this being what a $50 million movie,
$50 million, it's insane.
It's, you know,
I think it's gonna be a sneaky like some work. I think it's gonna be like a sneaky 6 nomination movie. That like at the end of the year, it'll have a bunch of technical stuff, and it'll get like it'll have at least one acting award, and like we'll gobble up like a 10th best picture nominee, something like that. Especially with a weird year, especially like with this.
a lighter year.
Yeah, it's a light year. Yeah,
and financially, it has to be doing better than I think even A24 expected it to do.
I don't think they expect
2 weeks at number one.
Yeah.
I think they fully expected Abigail to probably take number one.
It's already made its money back, pretty much.
Yeah, I don't think they expect it to make its money back. So,
yeah, so you know, look at that. You make a movie that people want to see, and people will pay for it.
It's,
you know,
wild
maybe,
to me that
maybe don't give Ari Aster $60 million.
Yeah, no. It's wild to me that this movie was an hour 40.
It's hour 42. Yeah,
there's just so much that these
hour 49.
You fit in this thing like it was. I don't know. It felt really deep, and when I left the movie, I was exhausted, but also like energized. Like I had all this adrenaline running through me. Like I couldn't sleep for a while.
I slept like a baby.
I don't know. There are so many things visually in this movie that will stick with me for a long time. And audibly, too, we'll say. But Alex Garland always has good sound. So
yeah, that necklacing scene like will stick with me. That slow motion, like that's gonna be probably a moment for me. The slow motion burning of the guy. Her Jesse crawling across the part, you know, the bed of bodies in the mass grave, including like the little, like when she kind of puts her hand on the head of like clearly a toddler, you know, things like that are gonna stick.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing for me is that like these things, this movie is in a way like deeply episodic, where like it's this moment happens and this moment happens and this moment happens, but the way that it feels is that it's all of like a whole, so. Like all of those things, as you were talking about those things, all of those, the sense memory of watching those things attaches itself to like a bunch of other stuff. You know what I mean? It's like inextricable from like one moment to like the next. I texted you right after I saw this movie that it's like the best movie I've seen since 9 days, and 9 days is my number one movie on my new pivotal film list, as you know, everyone who listens to this thing knows. Which is not to say that this is my number two movie on my pivotal film list. It is not. But it is the movie. And again, and we're talking about since 2021. Like, it's been, you know, a couple of years. You know, we put this on the list with High Life and, like, An Elephant Sitting Still and stuff like that. It is the movie that I felt was the most fully realized and the most viscerally felt. And I think it was interesting, Mario, that you had thought I would like maybe bristle at the idea that it was like so straightforward, but I actually found it like to be, I understood what you meant, but I found it to be like a totally of a piece of like Alex Garland's evolution, and therefore like totally not straightforward. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's up to something. I think he's found something that like no other film, which I think is one of the reasons that he's getting out, is that he's figured it out. He's figured out what he wants to do, and he's going to take it to its natural place, I'm assuming, in his next movie, and maybe it's this one, which is he's eschewed narrative, and he's eschewed exposition, and he's going for total sensory, like immersion in things. So like one of the things that like men works and doesn't work, but one of the ways that men does work is that what he's really after is the feeling of a woman has being confronted with the threat of a man. And the interesting aspect of like the end of that movie is that like from the beginning of like Western culture of or your, you know, English culture with that folk, you know, Rory Corcoran playing that folk man and giving birth to all these iterations of all these different men. They still end with her boyfriend who killed himself asking her to just love him unconditionally because he's a man and he wants her to love him. And that's what that movie is about. That movie is about the feeling that comes from the threat of a man. And this movie is about is not really about war, I don't think. That's just like a personal thing. It's definitely not about Trump. It's more about the feeling of the dissolution, what it actually feels like for your country to dissolve in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And like the choice of the journalist is not him making a comment on journalists, which is like one of the stupidest things I've heard. Is like he's like, oh, he's, you know, his dad was a journalist, and so he's commenting on journalists. It's not about journalists, it's about the reason they're journalists is because they're witnesses.
Yeah.
And it's the mm-hmm. concept of witness and what that means and how engaged are you in history. And so it's so I think the fate of Lee, I think, is so interesting because Lee for so long was just a witness to history, and now Lee is part of history. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And Kaylee Spaney's character, Jesse, took that picture. She's inserting Lee into history. I think I talked about this on the podcast before. There's a play that came out last year with Leslie Odom Jr. Called Pearly Victorious. And at the beginning of the very beginning of the play, all the actors come out on stage. There's a rack with their costumes, and they put like the final pieces of their costumes on. And there's some music playing, and then they all stand in front of the stage in like a pose, and there's a flash, like a flash, but like photo, like someone just took a photograph. And I thought of that so much. And it was that moment is like fixed in my mind because the tableau that was created to show that was suggesting fixation. And that's kind of what happens here with the still photos that they always show. You know what I mean? These mm-hmm. things are fixed. They become fixed in the culture. These are moments that are going to become fixed in the culture. People talked a lot about in other podcasts about the idea that like, oh, they would be just streaming live video, but live video is ephemeral. The picture is the thing that's going to last forever. Like you said, go on the Wikipedia page. I cannot say enough about this movie. This movie was fucking incredible. In the last half hour of this, the siege on Washington was just unbelievable.
Unrelenting. Yeah.
I couldn't have imagined it working like it worked. Like Lee kind of coming unraveled, and then the recognition like that she's still got a chance to get this. And she owes it to like all the people that she owes it to get this like moment. Everything was perfect. Like how unrelenting the Western forces were when they just fucking destroyed the press secretary.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, no deal.
She was a Secret Service agent.
I thought she said that she was the press secretary, but
no, regardless, she's a Secret Service
agent. Fuck. Like I was telling Andy when you logged on, I was just like nodding like, and like almost like clapping, like, you know, don't let him have a second. Don't let him have a moment. It's just great. I mean, and Nick Offerman as the president is like perfect casting.
Perfect casting. Yeah.
Well, I do like how this was basically Devs Redux. Like everyone from Devs came back for this.
Well, that's, and that, I think it's, if Alex Garland becomes one of those guys that has a crew, like for his last couple movies, like, awesome, do that.
Yeah, I like this crew.
It's like there's an analysis that's like I think you can have if you wanted to about like the casting of Nick Offerman, because like they show Nick Offerman in the beginning, he's Nick Offerman, but he's a good actor, he's delivering these lines, he's trying to figure out how he's going to frame this victory that didn't actually happen, and then you never see him again until the last moment of the movie, and all you want. Again, this is me, someone who's seen Parks and Rec like a million times.
Yep.
All you want to do is see him one more time. You want to see him as the president in that position saying, answering for something, saying something. And it was, and so I heard they're talking on a podcast about the idea that like Joel doesn't ever record anything. He's not like taking notes. He's not like getting a recorder out. He is like the recorder. So like, you know, just like, don't kill, like, please don't kill me is like, you know, the final quote that like the president gives. And he's like, oh, that'll do. That's all you wanted. You just, and you were there with him, with Joel, and you didn't even really know it. You just wanted to hear one more thing out of Nick Offerman as Trump's mouth. Again, I'm just like putting it out there because I think that's the, you know, the general conceit there. And it delivered, and it delivered so fucking perfectly and beautifully and violently. And like, I don't know. It's, I expected to like this movie. I was anticipating this movie. I didn't expect it to like blow my fucking mind, and not like in a political way, and not even in a way of ideas, but in a pure visceral filmmaking way. You know what I mean?
I don't think this does anything politically, which is what a lot of people are complaining about, which I don't think that was not the goal of this movie.
I don't think so either.
It was specifically trying to be more apolitical, trying to, I mean, I guess that's what you see from the journalists' perspective, mostly, just they're documenting, seeing
like,
what's going on.
Yeah, the only political aspect of it's just like the war is hell stuff, you know.
Yeah, and that's not really political. Just war sucks. Everyone should hate war. So yeah, people were upset that this didn't like lampoon like the left or the right or something. And I don't think that's a valid criticism of this movie.
Well, there's two moments that I would love to talk about. Is in one of them is the Jesse Plemons moment. And or the Jesse Plemons scene, and the other one is the one that we were talking about before, Andy, with the sharpshooter.
Those are my two favorite scenes in the movie. So,
and so both of those, Jesse Plemons.
I have good news.
Yeah, Jesse Plemons is wearing these red glasses, but he's clearly like a supporter of the president, right? He's American military.
I don't think he's
military. I think he's just like
he's militia. Guy. He's just
I
a
think,
guy.
Yeah. I think he's a guy who is opportunistic, was happy just to see a war and got to go kill foreign people that he always wanted to do the whole time. And
yeah, he's just
I don't think he, there. I think he was on anyone's side.
Well, so this is the interesting thing. I think that the way that Alex Garland puts these characters, both military in some context, but we don't know how or who they're allied to, which, you know, Joel says in the thing, into a counterculture, like just by what they're wearing, or the way that their fingernails are painted. You know what I mean? It's like, we know what this stuff means in like modern society, in like our current society. If like you walk up to a guy and he looks like that and he's got his fingernails painted, you could probably guess like, you know, pastel colors. You could probably guess like which side he's on. And I'm wrapping that in air quotes for the people that can't see me. You know, if you see, you know, Jesse Plemons' character wearing those stupid glasses, you might want to guess which side he's on, but you just like, you don't know. And those details in and of themselves don't like do a lot of narrative work. They do a lot of gap bridging between what our expectations are of a soldier and what like may actually be happening under the surface of all of this. And that might lead to more questions, but I love the idea that he was like, I'm not going to make this easy ever. I'm not ever going to say exactly what is like, who is
he's not spoon feeding anyone anything. Yeah.
I mean, another one of my favorite scenes is the scene after that initial siege that they're a part of, when they go invest. Oh, we're going to go look at that in the morning. We're going to go over there. And they go over there and they're embedded with this group and they kill this guy and they take some prisoners. And then Joel's laughing with a couple of the soldiers. We assume are Western forces, you know.
Somebody actually made a point about this, that there might be some identification of who particular people are. That the fact that they're wearing the Hawaiian shirts, they might be the Florida people.
Maybe.
The ones you see with the colored hair are the Oregon, like the Oregon
gotcha. Coalition. Oh, that's really interesting.
So I do wonder if that's like the what it is. Like, so,
it's possible.
Yeah.
But anyway,
because the Western forces would all be in Virginia at that point.
I guess so, but they might be cleaning. I mean, if it's a civil war and it's playing out anything, it's playing out like the Civil War.
Yeah.
There's so like little skirmishes kind of like all over the place, like cleaning stuff up. But the idea that they take those prisoners and they just line them up and they just fucking murder them.
That was
it's like
a lot to watch.
It's harrowing, and you don't know. You can only assume, like, the correct. You can only assume what side anybody is on, and you don't know if you're right. But that's why you're looking at it through the journalist's eyes, because like
I didn't know right what doesn't side matter. Really, yeah,
you're just they're documenting the phenomenon. Yeah. They're documenting the moment. And that's the thing that Alex Garland cares most about is the moment that you see these things happening, the moment that these things are happening to you. And that's, I think, the thing that people are struggling with in this movie, even though people keep going to see it, is that it's not clear what its narrative intent is. You know what I mean? It really just wants to bog you down and sit you in the moment. And so you feel it and you understand it with your senses rather than understanding it with your mind, which is like the sole reason I think this movie works so well. And one of the reasons I love it so much.
Also, it's funny, as I saw a lot of people criticizing like the entire thought of like the best battle sequences you've seen like in years sort of thing. And I think I fully agree with that.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, since Saving Private Ryan or Black Hawk Down, it's got to be up there in terms of. You know, it's not extremely violent. I mean, it's violent, but it's not as gory as like those two films are.
It's so casually violent though, which is
more
harrowing to me. I don't know. It just it really was bothersome.
But it's tactical, right? It's tactical and like methodical, which it's not really. That's what I found interesting about those kind of battle sequences, especially that kind of takeover of DC, is instead of it being so unorganized or chaotic, it's very much controlled. So, you know, something like Saving Private Ryan, D-Day, that's the Omaha Beach is like chaotic.
Yeah,
the helicopter crash shootout in
Black Hawk Down
is chaotic. This has like a certain sort of control and a certain sort of like going about your business and doing your job sort of.
But you're doing your job against an American.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? I found that so interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah, it was so good. I just read, at the exact same time that I watched this, I was reading The Sympathizer, which just got turned into like the HBO miniseries with Robert Downey Jr. And there's a scene in the third chapter where it's, you know, it takes place in Vietnam, and there's a Vietnamese general who's evacuating with all of his staff. And there's just great moment of like war writing. Of action writing, and this felt very much like that to me, where everybody, their goal was the White House, you know what I mean, and these are the obstacles that you have to pass through to get there, and there was never a doubt that they were gonna get there, you know what I mean. Everything was just like you said, it was laid out. This is the move, we're gonna do this. Oh, there's these guys here, I can hit that with a rocket launcher and take care of it. Oh, they're running a limo out. We'll take care of that too. The inevitability of all of this was part of what made it so overwhelming, is that you couldn't escape it. Never going to escape this.
It felt so real. Like I've seen a lot of movies that take place in the White House. This is the first time I actually felt like I was in the White House for some reason. It felt real. It didn't feel like a stage, I mean, the production design of this is incredible with that budget. I don't know what they did to do, like, the encampments and all that, everything, like, what was going on all the battle scenes. But when they're in that White House, I felt like I was in the White House, and it felt, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah, whoever did, like, the location scouting on this did an amazing job.
Yeah, it was, even, like, the meaningless, like, back road scenes, like you had mentioned, like, when the two other journalists kind of chase them down. They do that weird car switch thing. It switches between this kind of like idyllic country back road. Like, and in a second, there's just like a mass grave, like behind a house. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
God, Jesse Plemons was so haunting in this. Like, he's so good. He's so good. I mean, I love him and everything he does, but my God, I wish they didn't show him in the trailer. I wish I saw that blind, because it would have been even better.
I mean, it didn't detract But I think you're right. It would have been so fucking cool to just like encounter Jesse Plemons in red sunglasses.
Yeah.
Like dropping lye on a bunch of bodies.
Like, oh, there's still a body stuck up in there. Oh,
man. That
he was so
good.
Casually like scary. It was like one of the scariest things ever.
I do love how Jesse Plemons is here. Always plays that character or just like a total fucking goof.
Well, he said that, like, I don't know, you guys watch the Oscars, and he, like, apparently people were commenting on the fact that he had lost a lot of weight, and he had said he had started doing it for Civil War because they asked him to do this part, and he's just like, oh, if I'm a soldier, like, I'm not gonna be walking around like fighting a war for a while carrying like all this weight. So he like slimmed down for it. And that's part of it too. It made him somehow like more intimidating. That he was a little like an augmented Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
He wasn't like a good time, sad sack Jesse Plemons. He's like a Jesse Plemons who could mess you up.
I mean, this is like his character from like Breaking Bad, almost like sociopathic.
Just, that Todd character.
Yeah. Like, he's so good at just pulling that off. He's such a good actor.
This was not a Jesse Plemons that wonders how that's profitable for Frito-Lay.
No.
Yeah.
I love Game Night. It's such a good movie.
I wanted to see this movie again. Are you guys going to try to see it again or no?
I'll probably wait for it on when it comes out.
But... Well, when I got to Abigail, I saw it was... on, so I popped in, and it was like the third act. So I popped in, and I just watched the rest of it.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
did you pay for it?
No, I was walking on. I'm like, nice. Oh, Civil War's going on. I hear it's loud, so it must be near the end. So I went and watched it. It just it was really good. Like, I don't know. I do want to go see it again, but I almost just keep popping in when I see other movies. Probably.
Yeah, I almost went to do a double feature of Abigail on that today, and I didn't have time. But I was hoping Abigail was going to be playing a little earlier.
There's too many other movies. Too many other movies coming out. I want to see.
Yeah,
Challengers. Challengers is this week.
You know what's so funny? Are you excited for Challengers?
I wasn't, but
now I am.
I see. Even though like all the reviews are good, the movie looks so stupid.
It does.
I know.
He's my guy. Luca Guadagnino is my guy.
I know. Like, I thought you liked all this shit.
Like tennis, and it doesn't like. I kept hoping.
I love Zendaya too.
They're saying like this is an Oscar. This is an Oscar movie, and she'll get nominated for it too.
Well, so that was. That was always part of why they delayed it, because they needed her to be out there, not just for this, but for Dune. So when Dune got delayed, they delayed this because it's just part of the Zendaya
thing. This is supposed to be out last fall. Yeah.
They knew she was going to get nominated. If Zendaya is good in something and it's an adult role, she's going to get nominated for it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm excited for it.
I think the thing that's bugging me about it is I'm reading some of these reviews of it, and I kept hoping that it was going to be more than just like, Zendaya plays tennis and then like there's a love triangle movie, and it seems like it's Zendaya plays tennis and there's a love triangle movie
in a 2 hour 11 minute long movie.
Yeah. Is it that long? Oh boy. Well, I'm still gonna go see it. I don't care.
Well, yeah, I'll see it, but I'm not gonna do it happily.
You're gonna go in with your arms crossed, and then it's gonna blow you up, blow your mind.
Well. I do that a lot at movies. I'm always like the one weirdo who doesn't put his seat up and just like sits there like this.
Oh, I do that too.
Yeah, no, good. Yeah, yeah.
Mario does that. Yeah.
There's a lot of penis in Challengers, so you get some penis.
Yeah. Is there a naked Zendaya or no? That doesn't happen.
Yeah, that does not happen.
Sam Levinson's not involved in this, so
yeah. Sam Levinson. Yeah.
She doesn't get naked in that either, so
but she's close.
That shirt.
Everyone else does.
That white shirt is. Come on.
All right.
Man, I love Civil War. I can't imagine a world where this isn't my top 10 at the end of the year. So,
I mean, it's my, again, spoiler alert, it's already my number one. So
it is mine too. It's not even
something
mine.
It's my number one so far.
Something would have to be, again, this is going to sound really stupid. Something would have to be better than this to be my number one, which, you know, is a really stupid thing to say. But I can't imagine that thing is not here.
Oh, Boy Kills World also has good reviews, so I'm gonna have to see that as well.
What?
Boy Kills World?
What is that?
That's the Bill Skarsgård.
Oh, yeah.
Shawn Benjamin movie.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, the trailers did not look good for that one.
I like those style of stupid movies.
I like them too, but it just seems like the voiceover and
remember Gamer?
Mm-mm.
I didn't see that. Was that any good? Gerard
Butler, Michael C. Hall movie? I mean, I did not see Gamer. It's bad, but it's entertaining. Well, I think the interesting thing about that voiceover is I think they added it because the early reviews were it was a little more serious of a movie.
Hmm.
They were like, oh, maybe we should make this into more of a comedy.
It sounds, I don't know. The trailer looked really bad with the voiceover. So I don't know. I'm skeptical on that one. Are you guys going to see the Guy Ritchie movie? It's getting really good reviews.
I'm going to see it on Thursday, yeah.
What, the ungentlemanly?
I can't remember the name. That's why I didn't say it.
Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. No, that is not a Tom movie.
I like that Henry Cavill is doing other stuff.
I mean, I'm probably going to see this weekend. I just was curious if you guys wanted to because it looks fun.
I don't think I've seen a Guy Ritchie movie in 25 years. Whenever the last time I saw Aladdin was. Oh no! I forgot he made Aladdin, so I've seen pretty recently.
We're gonna dedicate a 2-hour episode to the Garfield movie, right?
I'm not seeing the Garfield movie. I can't believe they made a Garfield.
What if your kids want to see it?
They don't.
I know. Yeah. Then Tom will get new kids.
Yeah. My daughter is interested in seeing the Tarot movie. So
really,
yeah.
PG-13 though. PG-13 horror is just not my jam.
Gotta start somewhere. You gotta start somewhere. You can't start with Bo is Afraid.
God. I started with Halloween at 6 years old, so.
Yeah, that's, you know.
And look at me. I'm perfectly normal.
It's funny. It would be so funny if you were really mad at us for kind of chuckling at that. If you didn't speak to us for like a month.
Well, no. You guys think
I'm not normal.
The good dead air that followed that was perfect.
All right. I have to give you the Pivotal Film account stuff, Mario, so you can start logging in.
Oh yeah, I still have to do that too.
So I'll give them both to you. So I've been just doing like TN, what like you know, dash for like my opinion on things. You know, for newer movies that we're watching. If it you know, people are interested in kind of keeping up with what we're digging into that we're not talking about on the podcast.
Do you not want me to do that either?
Yeah, I just said I'd give it to both of you. I literally just said that.
I started following your account. I was reading your reviews. So it was good.
Well, I only started doing it because I wanted to. I don't want to do the social media thing, but I wanted a place to log like all the stuff that we're doing and maybe link to, link to episodes, like a place to store things, and it looks so cool. Once you've like put in like all your Pivotal Film lists and you've got like, you know, all those movie posters, you're like, oh,
yeah, like, it does look cool.
I'm a complete person.
Mario's anti-letterbox, but there's some.
Are cool you anti-letterbox?
Kind of. I just, I don't know. I'll do it.
It's more work than you want it to be.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like so much work. And I
don't think I've logged reviews since like The Shape of Water, but you know, I'll get back on there.
But I put your Pivotal Film list in. So now all you have to do is put your top tens. I put all my top tens in.
Okay, I can do that.
Just remind me.
I was also on a sports trivia podcast that just came out last week where I plugged this podcast like 40 times. So my trivia team name was listen to the Pivotal Film podcast. So if you get any bumps.
That's why our listenership is up so high.
Anyone from the Benchwarmers podcast listening to this. You probably didn't make it this long.
Have we ever talked about a sports movie on this podcast?
Yeah, sure.
Which one? You tell me.
Roadhouse had MMA in it. We've watched sports movies, right?
We've watched them. Have we talked about it on
Free
this podcast?
Free Solo.
Yeah, Free Solo. We didn't talk about it on the podcast.
We did, because it was my winner for...
But that's all we did.
Documentary, yeah.
That was it. That was the one.
There's that.
Did you guys talk about Champions?
No.
No, we didn't talk about Champions. I don't think Tom ever saw Champions.
I saw Champions.
It's good. I like it.
Good, yeah.
Maybe.
There was a lot of sports movies last year, so.
Challengers will be the first one.
Oh, Iron Claw? We talked about Iron
King
Claw?
Richard. King Richard King and Richard, Iron Claw.
Yeah. Iron Claw's not really wrestling. That's sports.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Being a brother is a sport.
He's not a brother.
He is. He's got two brothers. His sons.
There you go.
Sons.
So, all right.
So yeah.
Go to letterboxd.com/pivotalfilm. Watch
movies.
Are you
gonna put that in the show notes so people can click it?
I want to. I really want to. The show notes are, by the time I get to show notes, I'm like so exhausted with tagging things.
Fair enough.
But I'll try. But yeah, we'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks or week or whatever.
Yeah, we got Challengers to watch.
Some stuff. There's other stuff coming out. Oh, I saw the TV Glow.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Is that
very much looking forward to that?
Is that going wide? Because I do want to see that.
I think so. Or it's going like 824 wide, which is like 800 screens and then like 1500 screens. So it should be in our markets. There should be a place to see it.
I mean,
okay.
He'll have it.
I'll be able to go to Chicago if I want to drive that far, but
you well, do want to drive that far.
That's 2 weeks from now, right?
I think it's May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to that.
I don't know what that movie is, but I'm looking forward to seeing it.
The new trailer is, I think, is phenomenal. I loved We're All Going to the World's Fair. I thought it was great.
I don't know what that movie is, but I like the trailer and I like its vibe. So I want to see it.
Is it the same director?
Yeah.
Got it.
They gave them a little bit more money and, time. And
I didn't see that one. Is that good?
What, We're All Going to the World's Fair? Yeah, absolutely. Turn it on like late at night.
Okay, maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Oh yeah.
And 3 weeks we have Pullman.
Oh, it's on Max too. Nice.
What's Pullman?
I feel like it's the Chris Pine written directed movie. That's
Pullman. That's apparently a documentary about Bill Pullman.
Oh no. It's apparently a huge disaster.
Yeah, I saw the reviews were terrible.
I'm very curious.
Oh, 23% of Rotten Tomatoes. That's soon.
I think it was like TIFF and everyone was like, Chris Pine, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like it has a 3.1 average rating.
Wow. There's no way that's not good. All right, guys.
It'll be better than Back to Black. Get fucked, Sam Taylor Johnson.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. All these music outlets can write like, this movie is not that bad as much as they want. That movie is going to be fucking terrible.
It's going to be bad.
Yeah, that's Sam Taylor Johnson. It has a 39%. It is bad.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Okay, good.
Realize it.
I thought I was going crazy there for a second.
No.
All right, my friends. All right. Take it easy.
Yeah,
see you later.